Preface. Dressed in an ermine-trimmed grey damask robe with an English-style gable hood and a crimson kirtle underneath, the slight, dark-haired woman took her final walk. She went out of the Queen's lodgings, past the Great Hall, through Coal Harbour Gate, and along the western side of the White Tower to the black-draped scaffold. The constable of the Tower of London, Sir William Kingston, helped her up the scaffold steps, and she stepped forward to address the waiting crowd. Her coal-black eyes flitted over the crowd. As her gaze met those of her enemies, Thomas Cromwell, Charles Brandon, Henry Fitzroy, and Thomas Audley, she didn't so much as flinch. The people fell silent as they gazed at their queen, Anne Boleyn, who one witness described as being never so beautiful. The queen took a deep breath and spoke. Good Christian people, I have not come here to preach a sermon. I have come here to die. For according to the law, and by the law, I am judged to die, and therefore I will speak nothing against it. I am come hither to accuse no man, nor to speak of that whereof I am accused and condemned to die. But I pray God save the king, and send him long to reign over you. For a gentler nor a more merciful prince was there never, and to me he was ever a good, a gentle and sovereign lord. And if any person will meddle of my cause, I require them to judge the best. And thus I take my leave of the world and of you all, and I heartily desire you all to pray for me. Her lady stepped forward to remove Anne's mantle, and Anne doffed her hood, loosening those famous lustrous dark locks before tucking them into a cloth cap to keep them off her neck. That little neck! As her lady sobbed silently, Anne paid the executioner, the famous sword of Calais, who begged her forgiveness for the deed he was about to commit. Even he was moved by the dignity of the woman who stood before him. She showed no fear. Then the eyes that Anne had always used so powerfully were hidden by a blindfold, and she knelt in the straw, praying all the while, O Lord, have mercy on me. To God I commend my soul. To Jesus Christ I commend my soul. Lord Jesus, receive my soul. One by one, the crowd too sank to their knees out of respect for this woman whose courage and dignity spoke of her innocence. The Dukes of Suffolk and Richmond, stunned, watched the reaction of the crowd and refused to follow suit. Anne deserved this, in their opinion. The silence was deafening as the crowd waited for the executioner to strike. The only sound was Anne whispering her prayers. The executioner, visibly shaken by the atmosphere and by Anne's courage, noticed that the Queen kept turning her head slightly, anticipating the blow, so he called out to his assistant to pass him his sword. As Anne moved her head to follow what the assistant was doing, the executioner came up behind her, unnoticed, and beheaded her with one stroke. Her ordeal was over. Her head may have been in the straw, her blood flowing freely across the scaffold, but Anne's soul was with her father in heaven. Anne Boleyn was denied a proper burial with Christian service. Instead, her sobbing ladies gathered up her head and body, wrapped them in white cloth, and took them to the Tower Chapel, St. Peter ad Vincula. Here, the star of the court was placed inside an old elm chest which had once contained bow staves. Anne Boleyn, the mother of the future Elizabeth I, was then laid to rest in an unmarked grave, buried as a traitor to the crown. It was the 19th of May, 1536, and a Queen of England had been executed.